Ticks are ubiquitous in Arkansas as fans of the Razorbacks, more so even. If the title of state insect was won by sheer volume, ticks would have the strong chance of winning the competition. It's understandable that Arkansas lawmakers chose that for the honeybee. Nobody really much loves a tick. The Arkansas Department of Health says the little buggers are responsible for more human diseases than any other insect, even though not all ticks transmit diseases. In today's edition of Know the News, Greg Harden talks with the University of Arkansas Professor of Entomology, Dr. Ashley Dowling, and they visit about the little bloodsuckers and addresses the questions of that probably crosses a lot of Arkansas residents' minds at one time or another. Why do the ticks exist? Listen as Dr. Dowling sets the stage for more coverage in this weekend's Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette by reporter Doug Thompson on the dangers that ticks represent starting in the spring and continuing through the summer and fall. Higher levels of human activity in places thriving with ticks means there's going to be an uptick. Yes, we said it. In bites, and in the instances of ticks-transmitted diseases. That's in this weekend's Know the News podcast.
Back in May, my family went to a wedding in Little Rock, and at a luncheon, we had to park my truck beside a large stand of pine trees. And as we returned to the car, my wife, to reach her door, she had to brush up against one of the limbs of that pine tree. And about 2 minutes after we got into my truck, she kind of shrieked and said, "Tick!" And before she flicked it off her arm, all the windows were up, so I knew that tick was in my truck someplace. Now, you flash forward to almost a month later, and I'm on vacation, my family's on vacation down in the Gulf Coast. And I made a quick run to the store, and suddenly I realize I'm reaching back and scratching the back of my thigh. And the itch just gets stronger and stronger. And finally I asked my wife to take a look, and there that little hitchhiker tick has latched on. And so, I guess that tick had just taken a ride with us in our truck down to the Gulf Coast. And, ticks are just this reality of life in Arkansas. And one of the real benefits of living and working in Fayetteville is there's this big collection of really smart people down the street at the University of Arkansas, and I've got one of them as my guest today. Dr. Ashley Dowling is a professor in the Department of Entomology and Plant Pathology at the University of Arkansas. And he studies mites, biodiversity, and other related subjects. So I've got a pretty basic first question for you. Are ticks and chiggers considered mites?
Yes.
Okay.
They are. Yeah. So mites are a very large group of arachnids, so like spiders and scorpions and all those things. And then mites are a separate group. They're very diverse, and they include all sorts of things, including the ticks and chiggers.
So those are the ones we're, I guess, most familiar with.
Those are the ones people in Arkansas are most familiar with, definitely. Yeah, you can't go outdoors without tick and chigger encounters here.
So, we all like to think our own state is special, but I don't know that people want to feel like Arkansas is special when it comes to ticks and chiggers and things like that. But is there something about Arkansas that is particularly a great environment for these critters?
Yeah, I will say that. I mean, I've lived all over the U.S. and I've done research all over the U.S. in many tropical countries, and I've never been anywhere with more ticks than Northwest Arkansas. We've had times in the field where every 10 minutes I may knock 50 ticks off my pants, and so it's just tick populations here are big. The ticks are really abundant. Why? I don't know. We still have a lot of natural habitat, so that's good. Ticks need deer late in their stage, but early on they need all the rodents and lizards and small vertebrates to feed on. And so I think with all of the sort of natural habitat we still have left in the area, we sort of have probably very healthy populations of these food sources for the ticks, which allows them to to sort of maintain these high populations, and probably lots of other factors with, you know, little microclimates and things. But yeah, they're very abundant here.
So are ticks particularly considered parasites?
Yeah, they're blood-feeding parasites.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is there, in Arkansas, is there a tick season? Once you start getting into warmer weather, you know, you always hear people talk about tick season. And they have to be someplace the rest of the time.
Yeah, so the ticks are, they're out all year, but they definitely go through cycles in their population and in their development. And so in the spring is what I'd call sort of our first tick season. So as things start to warm up, you get outdoors, you'll find a lot of adult ticks. And those are ticks that have sort of made it through the winter. They kind of hunker down over the winter. They don't really do a lot. But then the spring comes and they get active. The adults are going to feed, mate, female lays eggs. And so in the spring, we've got a lot of activity. And then as the summer progresses, as it starts to get really hot and dry, things will slow down a little bit. So sort of the worst part of the summer, the really hottest, dry part, a lot of times tick activity will drop a little bit. But we also start to see a lot of those early stages hatching and getting active, so you can get into bad pockets. And then as the fall rolls around, as it starts to cool down, but it's still in it, and we get more rain, we get a lot more tick activity. And then usually by late fall is when we have sort of that next generation. So what people call seed ticks, those are all the ticks that hatch out of these eggs. So for example, the Lone Star tick female can lay hundreds, if not 1,000 eggs at one time.
My.
And she'll lay that pile of eggs, and all the larvae, which are the ones that hatch out, they basically hatch out those eggs, and they all just stay together in a clump waiting for a host to come by. They're looking for some mouse or something. But that's why if you walk through there, you don't get one seed tick, you get hundreds of seed ticks, because you basically hit a ball of them that are just waiting. And so the late fall, like I think of certainly September, is the time where I encounter a ton of seed ticks. And you tend to see less of the adults then. You still find them, but and so the seed ticks are looking for hosts, they'll mature, and then they'll basically go through some development and then hunker down for the winter. So that's sort of the normal tick cycle here. So that spring and fall are the really big, what I'd call tick season. The black-legged tick, which is one on the East Coast, which is very well known for Lyme disease, is a little different. So it's actually the adults are most active in the winter, but people aren't outside as much in the winter. But if you go out and you look at deer midwinter, you know, there's a ton of black-legged tick activity on them. So we just don't encounter them much because it's not our prime season to be out active in the woods.
So, you know, when I had my little experience here a week or so ago with the tick latching on, it started me thinking about, you know, why do these guys exist? You know, it's like they're just these awful things that, you know, we have to worry about when we go out in the woods and kind of, you know, they don't spoil our good time, but they're just something you've got to prepare for. And I just started going, okay, everything seems to have a reason for existing, but I'm trying to figure out why the tick exists. Why is that?
Yeah, I will say that that's probably the number one question I get, along with what's the purpose of them, followed up by how can we kill them all. Those are the three main things people always want to know when they find out I work on mites or ticks, chiggers, any of those things. I get the same questions about mosquitoes. And it's funny because it's a very natural question to say, why does this exist? You know, like for things we use, like phones, why do phones exist? Because we needed a better way to communicate. You know, why do cars exist? You know, we needed to come up with a better way to travel. So that applies to sort of those objects. But when we talk about wild animals, that's not really maybe the appropriate way to think about it. It's more of, you know, how do they exist? Because they're not there. They're not serving a purpose for us. And so it's how do ticks exist? You know, how did that happen? And that's, you know, we don't know for sure. We have a lot of evidence that we've encountered over the years trying to figure it out, along with lots of evidence for other blood feeding things. And so if you think about blood as like a food source, you know, it's an abundant, very present food source. You know, whether you're in the oceans or on land, in lakes, whatever you're at, there's some vertebrates of blood. And with insects, I think we've had, I think there's more than 14,000 insects that feed on blood, but possibly tens of millions that, you know, aren't blood feeders, different species. And so insects have tapped into blood, so mosquitoes, horse flies, black flies. With mites, you have mites, there's, you know, 50-something thousand species we know of right now, and ticks are the main blood feeders. There's about 900 species of tick or so.
Wow.
And then there's other mites that feed on blood on animals, but then most mites don't feed on blood. They're predatory, they're plant feeders, you know, they do different things. And so we see this pop up repeatedly throughout, sort of, if we look across the animal tree of life, you see blood feeding popping up. You know, another one, leeches. They're related to things like earthworms and other annelids, which none of those are blood feeders, but then you get leeches that specifically target blood. And so it's a theme that pops up a lot. And so how does that happen is the big question that we all have.
We wanted to take a break here to extend a special offer to our podcast listeners who are not subscribers to the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette or the River Valley Democrat Gazette by offering you a special rate. Just visit nwaonline.com/podcasts23 to get started. And now back to our show.
As far as the ticks go, I guess when I was looking at it, I was thinking, okay, are these things beneficial in any way? Because you're right, as human beings, I mean, we just look at them as these awful things that, you know, we have to check our bodies for after we're out in the woods. But they must benefit some part of the circle of life out there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even from a human standpoint, they provide a whole lot of jobs for people, you know, dealing with diseases and pest control. So we can sort of slap a purpose on there. But in terms of sort of, yeah, their benefit within the ecosystem, they play a huge role. I mean, they're an abundant food source for lots of animals that feed on little things like ticks. So in certain habitats, there's, you know, ground-dwelling birds that just love ticks. I mean, that's a big part of their diet. You know, lizards, things like that. So lots of these things are going to eat small arthropods. Ticks can be an abundant food source. You know, they play a huge role in sort of population regulation. So the diseases they transmit, you know, despite being awful, play a big role in sort of regulating populations of hosts. So a disease making things sick and leading to illness and death, you know, is playing a role in the environment. It's keeping, you know, just like a predator will keep populations of its food source in check, you know, these pathogens that are being transmitted by ticks that are making things sick, causing death, you know, it's essentially playing the same role. So you know, people always ask, like, if you could just magically make all ticks or all mosquitoes disappear, what would happen? And I think it'd be catastrophic, you know? I mean, you'd knock out a big part of the food chain. You'd have suddenly populations not checked by these diseases. And so the populations would boom like crazy. You know, I think it'd be a cascade of events that would, you know, it would be bad.
Wow. So. Okay. Well, I guess that makes me feel better about them a little bit. Next time I flick one off, I'll appreciate the role that they play out there. So I read where ticks and other types of insects can also be kind of the proverbial kind of canary in the coal mine as far as, like you're talking about, the ecosystem that – you know, that maybe provide some clues to how the ecosystem is doing. Is that true?
Yeah, there are definitely studies out there that have looked at that, and there are people that sort of monitor tick populations and can get an idea about what's going on in the general ecosystem. And a lot of that is, you know, because most of these ticks need these small vertebrates as their hosts, certainly early on. And you have to remember, there's, you know, like just in the U.S., we probably have about 90 tick species, but we really only ever see a few of them. You know, here it's the Lone Star tick is what we constantly see. But yet there are lots of ticks out there, other species, and they all require small animals during their life stages. And so if, you know, if ticks are booming, they're really high levels, it probably means that the small rodent population is really high because there's lots of hosts for the ticks. And at some levels, that can be good. It can show a healthy indication of things. Obviously, if rodent populations are too high and ticks are too high, that may be an indication that the predators feeding on the rodents are struggling, and that maybe something's going on with the predator populations. They're not able to keep the small mammals in check, and that's why those are booming. And so you can sort of get a feel for things are going, especially people that have, like, if you've studied the same area and monitoring things regularly, you know, you'll notice these shifts. And so, they could tell by looking at the tick populations what's probably going on. Now, you couldn't just go into an area that nobody's studied, though, before, because you wouldn't have a baseline for, are these tick populations high, are they low? But in areas where you've regularly monitored, yeah, they can be good indicators. And a lot of times they're easier to trap and monitor than the small mammals, you know, where you've got to put out traps and bait and, you know, they're mostly active night with ticks. You can go out and you can set CO2 traps up because they're a lot of them are certainly, like Lone Star tick, very attracted to CO2. So you could put a block of dry ice out and they'll just come crawling towards it. Wow. And so we make these traps where we'll use dry ice to emit CO2 and it brings the ticks in. And you can walk around with a felt drag is what we call it. It's about a meter square and you drag it across the vegetation and the ticks will grab on when it comes by because it sort of simulates a host walking through there. And so it's easy to go out and monitor ticks, much easier than, say, the mammal population at times.
So this kind of veers a little more into the medical arena, but like the tick that I had that hitched a ride with me here recently, you know, the tick, you know, bit and, you know, wasn't on me very long. But, you know, as far as these diseases that they can transmit, do, you know, as soon as I'm bitten, do I need to worry that I've been infected with Rocky Mountain spotted fever or something along those lines?
No. I mean, so at least what we know about the bacterial diseases like Rocky Mountain spotted fever, we have another one called ehrlichiosis, another disease we get in Arkansas that was actually first identified down at Fort Chaffee. So where it was first sort of identified. So that's fairly common in our state as well. And with those things, the tick typically needs to feed for an extended period of time. Often you'll hear that they need to feed for maybe 24 hours before they can competently sort of transmit that bacterial pathogen into you and cause an infection. And so usually if you're vigilant, you know, that's why I always tell people if you're out, just if you're really good at the end of the day, just checking yourself and getting all the ticks off, your sort of risk of contracting something like spotted fever is extremely low, even though these pathogens are pretty common in our ticks. So if you let ticks feed on you and just don't knock them off for several days, there's a really high chance you are going to get sick because a lot of the ticks carry it. But like I said, they need to feed for a while. And most people, you find the tick. A lot of times you'll feel it bite, or after it's feeding for a little bit, you'll start to itch, you know, your hand brushes against it. My wife seems to always find them in the middle of the night. And so she just rubs something and screams, and sure enough, there's a tick. So, but yeah, as long as you get it off and you check regularly, you're pretty safe. The only risk really on the short exposure are some of these weird viruses that pop up. I think they're extremely uncommon, but they pop up, and some of those can, you know, within 30 minutes you can be infected. So those are the scary ones, but fortunately, we don't see those very often, you know.
Just last question, you know, there's always a lot of different theories about how to get a tick off of you once they've bitten. I hear the tweezer is the best way. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the best if you've got any sort of tweezers, forceps to be able to grab on. You want to grab basically right down at the skin level. So you're essentially grabbing the hard sort of top of the mouth parts. The mouth parts are embedded in you, but you're grabbing right there. And you want to sort of pull out in in the same angle that they've entered. So typically, you know, they'll be laying down on your skin, and so they've kind of come in on an angle, and so you pull them backwards out that same angle, and then they typically come right out. And so that's the best way. The thing is, you don't want to break off the mouth parts and leave them in you. That's how people will get some infections, not disease infections, but just, you know, general infection at times. And then the stuff about, you know, I mean, you hear it all, like cover them in Vaseline, put a lighter to the back end or a cigarette, and those are all really bad ideas. You know, you torch the back end of a tick, all it's going to do is throw up inside of you, and then it's just going to dump in all that bacteria and everything else in its gut, and you don't want that. So the best thing to do is pull them out. They actually make, and you can get, there's often like little tick kits that, we used to give out one that was this company made it. It was like a little spoon, and it had a little notch cut out of the end of it. And so it was almost like the back of a hammer to pull a nail out. You know, you just sort of wedge the body in that groove, and then you just pull right out, and it pops right out. So things like that are really effective.
Well, now I'm going to have nightmares about, you know, a tick throwing up while it's latched onto me. Hey, I really appreciate you stopping in and visiting with us about this. I know that anybody that's out and about in Arkansas this time of year, ticks need to be not prevalent on their mind, but certainly part of their preparations. And so this is Dr. Ashley Dowling. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. That was great.
Tick-borne diseases are expected to be greater than usual this summer because of the mild winters. So you should check out Doug Thompson's story this weekend in the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. And we also have other stories this weekend that you might be interested in. Al Gaspany introduces us to the new incoming Fayetteville superintendent, John Milford, as he steps into some big shoes, succeeding John L. Colbert, who guided the school district through COVID and even has a school named after him. Mount Sequoia is withdrawing an application to rezone the entire property, and now is just wanting to rezone the building where the owner of a gym wants to open a coffee shop. Stacy Ryburn has that story and details about how Mount Sequoia is still working to update its strategic plans that may or may not involve public input. The Arkansas Commission of State Lands is starting auction season for tax-delinquent properties, and live auctions for land in Northwest Arkansas is set for July 18th. Ron Woods has that story. The city of Bentonville is preparing to start work on a multi-million dollar renovation to upgrade Phillips Park. Mike Jones tells us all about that. And the folks of the Arkansas Criminal Justice Reform Coalition is co-sponsoring a record sealing clinic for people who will qualify to have their criminal records sealed for the courts. Tom Sissom tells us all about that. And Lorinda Jenkins tells us about Ann Gorley, a nurse who has started a scholarship at NWAC in honor of Isaiah Torres, who was killed by his father. And for the River Valley, nonprofit Hope's Bridge received an award from the Arkansas Opioid Recovery Partnership to open a transitional housing in Fort Smith. Thomas DeCente reports on that. And Monica Brick has a story about Fort Smith celebrating a new park with an inclusive playground. In arts and entertainment, Corey Kelly was 9 when she got involved in the Miss America pageant system. And 16 years later, she's wearing the crown of Miss Arkansas and preparing for the national competition later this year. Meet her in What's Up and in the podcast with Becca Martin Brown, the arts and entertainment editor. What's Up will also include what's going on with the Fort Smith Film Festival, Firefly Fling, and the preview of Foreigner's show next week at the Walmart Amp. All this and more will be available to our subscribers on the tablets and smartphone apps and on our website at nwaonline.com and the River Valley Democrat Gazette.com. To those of you who are already subscribers, thank you for your support of local journalism. If you're not a subscriber, I hope you'll consider being one. We even have a special offer to the podcast listeners. Just visit nwaonline.com/podcast23 to get started. You can also click on the subscribe button to our websites, nwaonline.com or the River Valley Democrat Gazette.com. Or you can call us at 479-684-5509. Be sure to say you're a podcast listener. Know the News is a weekly podcast brought to you by the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette and the River Valley Democrat Gazette newsrooms. Thank you for listening. My name is Spencer Tyree, and we look forward to you coming back next week for the Know the News podcast. Have a great week.